are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Did you have to fend for yourself a lot? I mean, when there's 12 people, do you have to, like, fight for food and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, fend for yourself. A little bit. I remember one time in particular, I got home from wrestling practice in high school, and my mom had made this great big, like, crock pot full of, like, a beef vegetable stew. Yeah. All my siblings had picked out all the beef.
Oh, so, man. Did somebody go to war?
I was about to, yeah.
My wife is one of 11. And okay. I mean, that dynamic is very different from mine. I mean, I have a brother and a sister, you know?
Yeah.
And it's some of the stories that my wife has told me, it's like, it's done differently. You can't possibly parent the same way for 12 children or 11 as three. I wouldn't think. I don't know. Yeah. You know, as a parent, it was hard to keep up with two kids. How in the hell did your parents keep up with 12? Seriously.
Well, that's the thing, is they still got a few at home, so they're still at it. They're managing. They're doing great.
That is some crazy stuff, man. And did you ever get left somewhere where your parents forgot where they left you?
I'm trying to think if that ever happened to me.
Had to happen.
Yeah,
it's impossible for.
Well, but again, I was the third oldest, so I feel like if that were to happen, that would have probably happened to one of the younger ones.
How old is the youngest one?
Jackson, he is six. But I do come to mind. My parents never left me anywhere. But for some, like, there's the anywhere we went somewhere, they never forgot about me somewhere. But I would somehow end up wandering off and getting lost. I got lost at Disneyland a couple times. I got lost at this zoo, and it wasn't because, you know, my parents left me somewhere and forgot. It was because I got distracted by something and wandered off. So there is that. Yeah.
Is that a personality trait of yours as you're gotten older now?
Just wandering off. I mean, probably.
Yeah. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I am 27. I'm turning 28 next month.
Are you living in Utah? Or you've been in LA now, aren't you? Hollywood?
Yeah. I'm down in Hollywood. Right now with this quarantine, my wife and son were actually up with quarantined with my parents. They had a bit more space up here, so.
Yeah. Oh, so you're in Utah now?
Oregon.
Oh, Oregon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I should just read this.
Yeah. So I know. Yeah. The bio belief says I went to school in Utah.
Yeah.
I grew up. I grew up here in Oregon.
I gotcha. Did you like going to Brigham Young?
I did. Yeah. It was a great experience. I loved it. I grew up. My parents. That's where they went. That's where they met and everything, and I just always grew up wanting to go there. So I was glad that I had that chance opportunity.
Nice. Well, listen, now welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, and
thank you.
Hopefully we'll get some truths that'll be told. That's the game plan.
Okay.
You know, and so I noticed that you got a bachelor's degree in exercise wellness. So how did this all, you know, how did you get to that pathway that you wanted to get into that field? I mean, when you first started, you were an athlete. So what drove you to that point?
Well, growing up, I actually wanted to be a veterinarian.
Wow.
I thought that was going to be fun. My dream job, if we get into that later, was actually a stuntman. I can talk more about that later. But I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian because my grandpa was a vet, and I do like animals. I thought that would be fun. That was all the way up through my senior year. Then when I applied to BYU, they don't have a vet program or anything. So you just have to take a bachelor's, that was kind of in a related field, I guess you could say, and then apply to vet school afterwards. So I'd heard and been told that biochemistry was probably a suitable, undergrad. And I looked at the requirements for that bachelor's, and I said, absolutely not. That's just not going to happen. So then as I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we generally serve two-year mission. I served in Brazil. And while I was there, my kind of thoughts started changing, thinking that maybe I'd go into physical therapy. Because as you said, I was an athlete. And I kind of thought that, you know, everybody gets old and people get in accidents or have surgery. So I felt like there'd always kind of be an opportunity for work there. So I was thinking that when I got back from school, where do I want to study to before I go into PT school? A lot of people went into exercise science, but I've heard that was a little oversaturated. So I found something that I just fell in love with, which was exercise and wellness, because it really took the whole, like, the holistic approach of health. You know, I absolutely loved my major classes there. You know, when I took anatomy, we had like chronic disease prevention, stress management, things like that, that I just fell in love with. And so I took that and was thinking I was going to go into physical therapy, but the prereq classes of chemistry and physics, again, didn't suit me well. So I was thinking that I was going to go into to be a strength conditioning coach. So I interned with the strength coaches there because I knew one of them. And when my wife and I moved here to California, I was working as a personal trainer. And so that's kind of the pathway that went.
Yeah, interesting. And before you got into the exercise and wellness, and again, I know you're an athlete. Did you do much weight training during your time as an athlete?
Yes. So definitely weight training through high school, but none of the coaches there weren't strength and conditioning coaches, you know, did the best with the knowledge they had, I suppose. And then of course, when I went to college, after trying out four times for the football team, I walked on, but was only with them for an off season, right? just the summer. And so obviously there was being able to train much more, I guess much more intelligent, honestly,
right?
Because they actually had experienced weight training coaches there. And then when I got cut from the football team and went to play rugby, same thing, we were able to train with the actual strength coaches. So I was doing weight training, I'd say sports specific weight training, but certainly not bodybuilding.
Yeah. Interesting, because when I started, that was the case. Is like when you went to the coach that actually did the training, especially at the high school level, they were just like one of the assistant coaches. And basically what ended up happening is that they just generally just trained everybody for strength, five sets of five. That was kind of the general protocol back then, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if you get into a sports specific training program, you know that works for maybe a certain group of people, but mostly not, because sport is a combination of strength and power, you know,
right?
Strength and speed. And of course, all you did there was get athletes that were bigger, but slower. You know, and
sometimes,
So I was going to ask you, when you got, I'm assuming at Brigham Young, these strength coaches are pretty versed, in other words, as far as sports specific training.
Yep.
Yeah. And as far as like with exercise and wellness, how does that play into, is that valuable information as far as, you know, what's your target demographic in exercise and wellness?
Well, I think what's great about exercise and wellness is it would allow for very general, and then you're able to kind of move into more of a specific path if you so choose. I know one of the classes was, in fact, like it was a basic personal training class taught with the NASM curriculum.
Yeah.
Using, you know, coming right out of their textbook and things like that, which again, that's very general, I would say. It wasn't very, very specific, but it would allow for more specific, you could say, certs and pathways that way. But again, because we dealt with kind of a general nutrition, again, stress management, like I said, chronic disease prevention, anatomy, and exercise science was talked about as well. I felt like it was a very general, so it was a great base to start with.
Yeah.
To do a general population. But if I wanted to go into like strength conditioning, personal training as well, I did end up getting, you know, my NASM cert, performance enhancement specialist, fitness nutrition specialist through NASM. Then I ended up getting my certified strength conditioning specialist through NSCA. So I was heading more off in that direction.
Yeah. I got my, certified, strength and conditioning specialist from NSCA as well, many moons ago. Yeah. So they're still around, I guess, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good darn. That's a long time they've been around. That's pretty cool. Okay. So when you started your personal training, Now, this is when you're finished with Brigham Young. Is that when you started doing that?
I started in the middle. So I was working as a personal trainer for the last, I'd say, maybe year or two at Brigham Young University. And then I applied for another training job here in California when we moved.
Okay. So when you say you worked at Brigham Young University as a personal trainer, were you working for the college as a trainer?
Sorry. I should have specified there. So they actually had that option for some people, but I actually worked at the local gym there in town. It was Gold's, but then all Utah Gold's turned into their own brand of Vasa Fitness now. So if you go to Utah, you see Vasa Fitness Gold's down there. Yeah.
Okay. So you worked inside Gold's gym then?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I assume that they provided you with clients, or did you have to build your own clientele?
It was mostly building your own. Every so often, you'd get kind of maybe a referral from the manager, someone who came in to sign up. But I'd say it was definitely more like a 90-95% building your own clientele.
Yeah. So how did you build your clientele? Was it all word of mouth? Were you inside the gym a lot where people could see you? How did you do that?
It was definitely have to be, I'd say a little bit of both, but I'd say more so me being in the gym, yeah, a lot, lifting, talking to other people, things like that. And then it was kind of also being around for when new members showed up, because I was in the gym so much that if the manager needed a trainer to be pulled in to talk to them or something like that, I was around enough to start building up that way.
And did you do like consultations before you got your people started when they came in to kind of walk me through that process? If I'm working and training with you, you set me down and you do like some analysis to find out where kind of the starting point is and all that kind of stuff. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So it was all very, very basic. It was sitting down, talking about their goals that the individual had, how, if they've, tried to get those goals before, maybe where they might've failed. And of course I was talking about what we would do differently with, as their trainer to help them reach those goals. Then yes, it would take them through a quick, maybe 20, 25 minute, session there. So they can kind of see what it's like to work with a trainer, things like that, and come back and talking with them again after that. Nothing super crazy, nothing out of the ordinary. Again, it was just very basic.
Yeah. Were you able to apply your schooling at that point when you were as a personal trainer?
Oh, certainly, certainly. And of course, with time and more experience comes better knowledge and wisdom how to do it. I was a better trainer, obviously, when I moved here to California after my schooling, after more experience when I was working here than I was back there. But it definitely helped being able to understand, how difficult work, family, all that stress could be. And again, like I mentioned many times before, that stress management class, bringing that into it and helping them to manage and deal with stress, rather than just saying, let's just try to ignore it or anything like that. So that was something that I was able to use as I look to build clientele.
Yeah. When you talk about wellness, like if I'm working with you, just expanding more on what you're talking about as far as stress management, how would you, if I'm high stress, how would you address that with me? And what would my general program, because, one of the things I learned from a real smart guy that was an advertiser, or he specialized in helping people build a unique selling point to their business.
Sure.
Because you had a lot of trainers in there, like, what makes you so different than the guy that's working out or the gal that's working next to you, So if I'm walking through this process with you, if you can tell me just a little bit, not in great depth, but what did my workout look like, the things that I did for training, and then how did you address nutrition and then my stress? How did that all fit into your program, me working with you?
Okay. So if we're talking, let's start with, how it would, just the exercise program. They always had us do, especially when I moved here to California, working at the Equinox there, they always loved to do the FMS tests, right? Functional movement system test there. So basing off of those, it kind of comes down to, what your ability is, because obviously you don't want to hurt anybody in the gym. You want to find where their ability is and start building from there, depending on if they're able to handle, just as an example, a back squat. Well, if they're not really able to handle that barbell or anything up there, so maybe let's change to like a kettlebell or a dumbbell front squat, and, you know, or suitcase squat, something where we start kind of adjusting that way, right? Nutrition-wise, kind of comes down to, I think nutrition is a real quick tangent. It's probably one of the most difficult because people aren't necessarily always honest with nutrition. Right. Yeah. And so that comes down to more of a having as a trainer being responsible enough to kind of reach out, maybe follow up with them about the nutrition. But at the same time, I'd always talk to people about, you know, all things in moderation. If you enjoy having some of those, you know, the junk food or the cookie or whatever it is, you know, that's not going to completely ruin your results there. But it's about moderation. It's about having most of that, you know, that 90% of that coming from those great whole foods there, and then having, you know, the small snacks. But that's just it. It's a small snack. You shouldn't be basing around, you know, that that junk food, right? And then stress, I always like talking about how when it comes to stress, our bodies always react the same way, whether it's you know, from ancient days being chased by a lion or something, versus getting up to do a public speak, like a public speaking. Your body doesn't know the difference, you know. The stress reaction is always going to be the same. So if you're in a state of constant stress from, again, work, yes, as wonderful as family is, it's still stressful, or whatever else you may be doing. Well, when people say, well, to eliminate stress, well, if you want to eliminate stress, then you quit your job, because that's, you know, I mean, that. If you're going to eliminate it, well, that's how you get it. You get rid of the stressor, right? Same thing with your family. Well, just, you know, obviously, that's not the point. You can't do that. So it's the idea of looking at stress and what it is. So your body, because it reacts the same way, part of that is kind of being able to consciously look at those stressors and then say, well, is it eustress or distress? Distress meaning, you know, it's a bad, it's a aggravating situation. Where eustress, it's still stressful, but it's a good thing. You know, I have a son who's almost a year old, and he's stressful, but it's a great, wonderful thing. You know, so kind of understanding, consciously looking at these stressful situations instead of just saying, woe is me, looking at it and say, okay, well, how can I grow? How can I change and improve from this already is a conscious way to improve that stress. And then we talk about other stress, simple stress management techniques, whether it's, you know, right before bed, doing deep breathing exercises, kind of different meditation things or stretching, these ways to, again, manage that stress, because you can't just get rid of the stress. So talking about kind of each of those processes and kind of helping them that way, I think is a good, that kind of sets me apart, because I don't really have any other trainers that I've really personally dealt with that talk about the importance of being able to just manage stress rather than, you know, trying to push it away and forget about it.
Yeah. And I think that's smart. One of the things I learned, and again, I had to learn this, you know, having the background that I did, not only as an athlete, but getting into the sport of bodybuilding was a whole different animal. You know, I didn't know what I was getting myself into until I was really into it, you know, and strangely, I was very attracted to that. And part of it was because it was so darn regimented and hard to do. You know, when you look at the actual percentage of people that end up on stage, it's very, very low. And I understand now why. And if I didn't have a background in the sport, anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that you're right. Your body is designed to handle stress. It's built for that. It's the difference between when it's manageable to when it becomes chronic. And when I say chronic, I mean, like, to put it in training terms, when you start overtraining your system where you're stressed out all the time, bad things happen. And I was somebody who that happened to. And the way that I had to like, and again, I don't know, something like this might be a good tool for you to use, but the way that I looked at this was I had a mindset that was all or nothing, and it was very difficult for me to control that. And you almost had to have that imbalance when you're in sport, in that sport. Not unlike, you know, I mean, other sports also is the same way, but I'm just talking about bodybuilding now. And I knew that after I had my issues with health, that I don't have the personality where I can just change that side of me. It's too hardwired. I'm a high-strung person, and it's very difficult. It's hard to change people at that level, to be honest with you, in my opinion. So what I ended up doing, which really worked for me, and I think you're saying this to a degree, is I said, I'm going to give that stuff that stresses me out, whether it be work, children, whatever, and I'm going to give it its due. In other words, like what you said, I'm not going to run away from it. I'm going to give it its due. But what I'm going to do differently is I'm going to give it a day or two its due, and then I'm going to put it in a box. It was a way for me to deal with that in that with that metaphor. Put it in a box, move on, and know that I can come back to it and stress out some more if I want to. And now walking away from that, so it wasn't chronic. So I wasn't stressing about it for 3, 4, 5 days, you know. It just gave me that. It gave me the break, and it gave my body that break where I could recover from all that. I don't know. You know, that's how I handled it. You know, because everybody, I mean, you can talk to you know people in one way, but not everybody can get that because we're not all hardwired the same way. That's just my opinion. I don't know if you come across that with different people. Like, did you have to change your? Like, a good coach knows how to make adjustments based on the athletes or the people that they're dealing with. Did you find that that was kind of the case when you were dealing with people?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So everybody's going to be a different level of how committed they are to what they need to do. And just as you said, you can't tell everybody to do the exact same thing, especially you said in how you manage or deal with the stresses in your life. Yeah. Right. You can't just say it's not a one size fits all. So it's finding what works for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, you know, to make, you know, the goal is to make everybody that you train productive, but that's easier said than done in a big way.
Yeah.
You know, when you're actually right in the middle of all that stuff, you really realize it's like, damn, I mean, we're all humans, but boy, we're really different in a lot of ways. You know, we're mostly the same, but we're a lot different, you know, at times, you know, so it's tricky. And that's where you have to give coaches that are really good coaches a lot of credit, because there's more to it than meets the eye, for sure. Right. Okay. So you moved to Los Angeles and you continue to do personal training. Did you do personal training again at a Gold's Gym or Equinox?
You Equinox. Did there, right? Yeah. Yep. Equinox. I was at Equinox.
Okay. Now, again, you probably built up a clientele there. And then, you know, now I want to talk about what took you from being a personal trainer to becoming a stuntman?
So that one, like I said, I grew up saying I wanted to be a vet. That was kind of like my career. I'm going to be a veterinarian, but my dream job, if anybody asked me, was honestly to be a stuntman. But I wasn't exposed to it. I didn't know the first thing of how I even get into that. Right? I grew up here in Oregon. None of my family are performers either. But I always thought that'd be the coolest thing. And when I went and started training at Equinox, I met a gentleman there. His name was Sheridan Christ. And super nice guy, became good friends with him. And then just one day it came up. I was like, so wait, Sharon, what do you do for work? He says, I'm a stuntman of Universal. And I went, stop, hold up. You're a stuntman. Universal's like, yeah. I was like, I told him, of course, my fanboy told him how I always wanted to do that. And he looks at me and goes, can you throw a punch? And I said, well, yeah. I took that when I was younger. I'm not going to move. I wrestled for 12 years not to throw a punch. And the movie's like, because we got auditions, you know, by, you know, the beginning of next year. And by this point, I lost my mind. I'll be completely honest. When he told me that, I said, I'm done personal training. I'm going to go be a stuntman. Yeah. I had clocked out. That was what I was going to do. And so he did. He took me under his wing a little bit. And anytime I was there not working and he had some time, he practiced throwing some punches, and taking hits and things like that. And that was around November of 2016. Come January the following year, my wife sent me an audition as a performer at Disneyland. So I went there and I acted surprised. I got that. So I started there and I was like, wow, this is fantastic. He was super excited for me. I did not get the first round of auditions. I auditioned for Universal twice. Or no, there are two auditions that year. They have two every year for different shows. I didn't get them. And I was bummed out, you know, whatever, kept going, because, you know, get ready for maybe the following year. So I was, you know, kind of getting ready for that. And around May, beginning of May, I believe it was, this my friend, he actually passed away.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Of that year. And I was devastated, of course.
Yeah.
I was still training at Equinox at this time. But I also become friends with another mutual friend that this guy had worked with. Well, I was at Disneyland. He was doing stunts for the show, and I was a performer. But he told me that they're going to have auditions for the Pirates Dinner Adventure show in Buena Park. And he said it'd be perfect for that. That was around June. And so I auditioned for that, and I got that. And once I got that, I left Equinox and was working at Disneyland and Pirates. In the following year, I auditioned again for Universal. The Action Horizons stunts is the people who do those shows. And I ended up getting one of the shows. And I've been working with them for a little over 2 years now.
Really?
So, yeah, that whole thing is how I got into being a stuntman there. And it's been a blast. It's honestly the funnest thing I think I could do.
So when you're stunting for one of those shows, who are you actually stunting for and what are you doing? Like, for example, so, in the first one that you got, what were you doing? How did that look?
So the first show that I got was the special effects show there at Universal. And this show kind of, they have these hosts that take you kind of almost behind the scenes of how some of the effects are done in movies. They talk about models. They talk about, you know, the glass mat. And then they basically say a line of their other practical effects that use performers, not just props, practical stunts. So myself and one of the other performers, we rappel in from the ceiling, right? We go on to the stage, they introduce us a bit, then we do a stage fight up there. We go off, we do a quick change, we come back, and I actually fuel and then light one of our other stunt performers on fire, put him out. And I mean, that's that show. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. Okay, so right there, let me stop you right there. Then you're not, see, when you say stuntman to me, I'm thinking that you're filling in for somebody, but you guys are not. You're actually the performer. You're not filling in for the main actor, so to speak.
Yeah. No, for this one, we are the performers up there. And then the other show, the main show that everybody there who wants, I just recently got before the shutdown and was training into, is the Waterworld show. And it's it's about a 20, 25 minute stunt show that's based off of the movie Waterworld.
With Costner.
Yep, with Costner. Yep. So this one just kind of takes the best action bits of that movie. And we have this great, fantastic, so much fun show. And I finally got into that one. I was training into that. And that one, you know, there's jet skis going around. I drive the boat that comes in. Again, there's more fights. We got explosions. You got some high falls in the water. It's like I said, it's an absolute blast. And it's so much fun to do.
But let me ask you this. Is it like, because I'm asking you this, like, I don't know. I'm not, you know. So is the stuff that you're doing, is it kind of like wrestling, you know, with the big time wrestling, they go, well, some of that stuff is fake. Is there like the tricks that you're doing that you have, but you have to, I'm sure you have to be skilled at it, but is there a certain amount of trickery? How does that work as far as the behind the scenes stuff?
Sure, of course. So yeah, so we're obviously not actually punching each other in the face, right? If we're doing any kind of face hits or anything like that, we're probably, you know, it could be anywhere from this far, you know, maybe this far away, but the whole trick is, you know, selling it from the audience there, right? If you make that, you know, that punch or that hit, and you do it right, it looks like, you know, you actually made the hit, everything, but they don't see that. So the trick, of course, is to make it look as real as possible without actually hitting and injuring the other stunt performer that you're fighting with.
Okay, right. So how do you do that? Is there a lot of repetitions involved?
Oh yes. We train many, many times, multiple times a day during rehearsal, and then once we even get into the show, every single day before you do your shows, you do a fight call with whoever you do a fight with. So you'll go to your position. You run through very slow kind of the fight because you've got multiple performers as well, you know. A live show, of course, is going to be different from TV and film. Because TV and film, you might run it a few times, but it'll still be with just you and maybe one other person. Mm-hmm. Whereas in these live shows, we've got a bunch of different people for multiple people in the same role. Yeah. So one day I could be fighting against one person, and the next day it's somebody completely different. They might do something a little different. So before every day you go in, you run your fight calls. You run the fight a few times, maybe make adjustments, say, hey, can you maybe bring that punch up just a little bit? Or, oh, hey, I actually kind of like it this way. So you work with that. So then come showtime, you both know you're on the same page, or even if you're fighting multiple people, you're all on the same page. Everybody's safe and everybody knows what to expect.
Yeah. Okay, so like for this show that you're talking about, and especially when you have multiple fighters that you're going to be fighting. Yeah. How many months or hours do you have to train before that show goes live, you know, in front of a crowd?
So we usually have about, I think we're planning, yeah, about a month of training, basically, you know, 5 days a week. That we were training, getting into, getting ready to go before we have what are our clearance shows, you know, where our bosses are all watching. Yeah. You know, they're watching very close. And then if you pass that clearing show, meaning you're safe, you know, first and foremost, you're safe to yourself and fellow performers, and then you put on a good show. You know, they'll say, okay, now you basically are on the roster to be scheduled and put in. But the full training process was generally about a month.
I would think it'd take more than that. That's amazing to be able to do that, and especially at full speed.
Yeah.
And I guess that when you're around long enough, you start training with some of the same people. But especially when you're training with somebody that you haven't trained with before, I mean, it takes a little bit to get their, you know, exactly how they do it compared to somebody else, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. And what's great about the people I work with again over Action Rise, they're all fantastic. You know, veterans who have been there for years are extremely patient. You know, but they're also very much there to help everybody. You know, no one's there to like, I'm going to take what's mine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're there to train, they know that safety's at risk here, so they need to say, hey, let's make sure everybody's doing this right, and they want. Everybody else to succeed. Everybody there wants everyone else to do well, because if everybody else does well, you know, then by default as well, you also do well. You also look better in your shows if everybody else is doing well too.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of times you don't have that camaraderie in different sports, and it sounds like you guys have that, which is cool. You know, people have your back like that. Do you guys have any lines that you say in your shows, or just is it all just physical?
So in the Waterworld one, my character would not have any lines that he says. I lip sync a couple, right? But we're not. There are a couple characters there who are mic'd. Just we're not one of them in this special effects show. I have like a couple lines, right? Uh-huh. Very very few. Because we're not in that show. We're not really the stars. For that,
right.
When I was working at the Pirates Dinner Adventure, because I'm no longer there, but that one, all of the performers there are mic'd. Everybody there has lines, so you're mic'd up and you're acting while also doing stuff there too.
Are you a part of the Screen Actors Guild?
I am not. I am working on that one.
What does that mean that you're working on it? What do you have to do in order to be in the Screen Actors Guild?
A couple different things. So the main way, most common way, is basically is to getting three vouchers for work. Basically, that means that you did a small union job, if that makes sense. So a lot of it's very very common for almost any actor, but also stunt people, to just do background work. Right there for TV, things like that. And so I got one voucher because I was asked to do background work for the show Ballers.
Dwayne Johnson.
Yep. What was so funny was I actually wasn't even used. they got myself and two others a super super early morning call, got us all ready, and they did the shoot, but they didn't use any of us, but I still got the voucher. So that works.
Really?
Yep. So
did you end up, as they say in show business, on the cutting floor in editing or what?
I wasn't even filmed. I sat in the green room.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. That's an easy voucher. I'm sure you would have rather been actually, you know, doing your thing, but still, you got the voucher. Anyway, go ahead.
Exactly. So that's kind of a luck of the draw. It can also be if who you know, that if somebody you know might be a part of a project, they could ask you, say, hey, do you want the work, something like that, and they could help you get in, which is great. So a lot of it is who you know. Another way is, and it's a very, so I've been told, it's not as common, is basically called being Taft-Hartley, is again, doing a you could say a larger union project. And basically what it is who's ever coordinating, directing it, casting, whatever, basically says, we cannot find we cannot find someone who is in the Screen Actors Guild who meets what we're looking for. But we have this person who is not a member of the guild who does fit it. So basically there's, you know, some paperwork things you fill out and say, well, they're going to do this role. So oddly enough, I did do that. There's something weird that I guess I can't go like the specifics of why it hasn't gone through or whatever, but the project I did a Taft Hartley project, and I was actually doubling Drew Brees, the Saints quarterback.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you kind of look like him.
Oh, thanks. that's not a bad guy to be compared to.
No, seriously. Yeah, that was a compliment for sure.
No, thank you. Yeah, so that was actually a really neat experience because, you know, show up, I'm dressed just like he is, wearing the exact same clothes. And part of the day was there was a point where they had to film him throwing the football. Yeah. And so he starts warming up, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I know he has to actually throw it to someone. He's just kind of stretching and moving his body. And I was like, he has to throw it. So I put myself right into a position where he could see me. And so he looks around and he sees me there. I just put my hands up like this. Uh-huh. He gives me a nod and then just throws it. And that ball zipped. You could just hear it splitting the air.
Yeah, I bet.
And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't even trying.
Yeah. Oh, but he probably put it right dead center in your hands.
Oh, absolutely.
Those guys are super accurate. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really fun experience right there. I would think.
Oh, it was the coolest thing. So I played catch with Drew Brees about 13 passes, 12 to 13, yeah. Sorry. And it was awesome.
not too many people can say that. Hey, speaking of it's who you know, I have something to tell you. Yep. I actually used to train Kevin Costner back in the day. I trained him when he was doing Dances with the Wolves.
Uh-huh.
And I trained him for a while. And I got a gig, a audition for The Bodyguard. At that time, I was bodybuilding, and I was like 280, I was up there, you know?
Yeah.
And I was auditioning for his name was Frank. He was like one of the bodyguards that was going to take over the bodyguard that was with Whitney Houston at that time. Yeah. So I was going to be causing a little bit of angst when I got that job. But I got to tell you something. That was horrifying to me. And I thought, it was only a few words, you know. Kevin, I got to know him really well, and I traveled with him, and I got to know him really well. Anyway, and I thought, they called me one time. They said, hey, you wanted to do this interview for this bodyguard? I said, yeah, man, why not? And I thought, it was only a few words, Brock, but I want to tell you something. That was a hard, and after I did that audition, I walked out and I said, I never want to do this again. I mean, that just, because it's definitely something that's easier than it looks, man. I tell you what, I choked more than one time, you know. I kept going, no, let me try one more time. I could do better than that. And I couldn't. It was awful. You know? So as being a stuntman, are you looking to move to where you're actually getting parts now that you're an actor, or is stuntman where you want to be?
Because I have a wife and son that do depend on me, I'm kind of in the position of where I can get the work, I'll take the work, But if I could do a little mix of both, doing some stunts, but if acting, cause I'm looking to kind of up, my credibility as an actor. I mean, this last summer I did a live stage show, professional live stage show. It was West Side Story. So it was a lot of fun. So if the opportunities do arise, I kind of put myself in that position to do acting and start pursuing that. Yeah. I would love to do that too.
Yeah. So right now it seems like the stuntman's got a little more stability for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got just with these shows been able to do that. So yeah.
Yeah. How you said the union, so do you sign a contract, and if so, for how long?
Contract with Action Horizons, these guys?
Yeah, do you sign, are you under contract? Is that how you, are you an independent contractor?
Not exactly. It's like, so So the Action Rises company is the one who kind of is in charge of these shows at Universal, or at least like the stunt aspects of them. So like, I'm not a Universal employee. I am an employee of the Action Horizon stunts. So that being said, if other projects, let's say other projects presented themselves, whether it's acting stunts or whatever it is, then I am of course able to go and do that. A lot of the guys there do other stuff. One of my friends who I work with, he had like some small role, like a couple roles in, I think, Call of the Wild. Him and a few others, they were in that movie Us.
Yeah.
If you remember that one, I think one of my friends actually, I think in the movie as a stuntman, I think he said he died 2 or 3 times.
Wow.
Times in the film. Yeah. So they used him. That's the thing. They used him like 2 or 3 different times as a stuntman dying. So that's the thing. What's really great about, you know, Action Rises is they do know people who are out there in the industry. So there's always a possibility of maybe by word of mouth getting into different projects.
Yeah. Okay. So then you work for Action Horizons.
Yes.
Did I say that right? Okay.
Yep.
Do they pay you? Yeah, I'm just being nosy in a way, I guess, but I'm just kind of curious. Do they pay you? Again, are you under contract with them for a year, or is it based on performance? Like if the people like your work, then you're going to get farmed out, so to speak, more often than somebody else, correct?
I mean, yeah, the better performing you are, the more likable you are, the better chances you're going to get, right? The more people like you, the more they're going to say, hey, we want this guy working with them. And of course, dependable you are. But it's not a contract of you're going to be with the company for 2, 3 years or whatever. So it's not like that. It's once you're in, I mean, yeah, you're basically, you're an employee and you're working with them until you are basically decide to leave yourself. Or if there is some circumstance where they have to let you go, which that's more of, that'd be kind of on you,
You're an employee, more of an employee at this point.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I would say, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, that being a stuntman, that's going to be harder on your body overall compared to somebody who's just doing basic acting. Is that true or not? And if that's the case, what's the lifespan of a stuntman? How long do you guys stay in the industry before you're beat up?
Oh, man. So to answer the first question, yes, absolutely. Oh, the stuntman and women, of course, definitely are a lot more physical, a lot harder on the body than just the normal actors. If I may, I won't use their names or anything, but I just had a friend of mine who was on a project. He was doubling on a TV show, and he was just kind of talking about how they're doing a fight and ended up having to go to the ground quite a few times, and he was running it and doing pretty well, and he was getting tired. But as a stuntman, we can't really afford to get tired.
Right.
You know? So he was doing the fight and get up and kind of have to control your breath right for the next scene and things like that. But then the actor came in who was doing it. He couldn't really keep up. he couldn't keep up with what the stuntman was doing. And he told me, he's like, yeah, I kind of felt good about that, you know? Because the actor just kind of lied there for a second. And of course, everybody said, well, are you okay? Okay. He's like, yeah, fine. Just let me lie here for a second. But we don't get that treatment. We lie there for a second. It's, hey, get up.
different dynamic there. So I would imagine then that you probably pay attention to making sure that you're still training and that you have a good diet and you take care of yourself that way, right? To prolong yourself in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's the thing is of course, being a stuntman, you got to take care of yourself. But then I also compete in bodybuilding, that kind of ties in. That's actually helped me, honestly. I auditioned for Waterworld, I think 4 times before I finally got it, this role, and I finally got it. And I honestly do believe in bodybuilding helped, because I was able to put on the size that I needed to get this role. They wanted bigger guys. And the first 3 times, it just wasn't quite there. But this 4th time, they're like, they finally brought me in. And so bodybuilding honestly ties in with me as a stunt performer too.
Oh, interesting. Maybe even more so than training yourself as an athlete, a sport specific athlete, because bodybuilding is a whole, as you know, those guys, listen, I was in a sport and I played a lot of years of football, and bodybuilding is it's not really a sport. It's an art. You know, a sport is where you move your feet. And so, but still, you know, when it comes to the industry that you're in, I can actually see, I can actually see how bodybuilding would really apply.
Yeah.
You said that you competed in bodybuilding. Where did you compete?
So the first show that I did, it was, okay, so it was really fun. I do have to a slight tangent off this one. I grew up not interested in bodybuilding. I always thought, I was like, well, that's unathletic. It's not for me. It's right. not my thing. But then when I moved out here, you know, I said I was training at Equinox and everything, I felt like I was not really progressing how I wanted to, not just physically. I still had goals. I still worked out at the gym, but I just didn't have something that I was really looking forward to that really kept me just driving. And so I thought, you know what, why don't I do a bodybuilding show? I'm here in Southern California. There's got to be a local one that I can do. I'll just do one and just to say I did it and be done, right? Yeah. So I started training. And I took it seriously. I went all in for it. And after I did that one, I just fell in love with it. So it was the first show I ever did was through the UNBA. It was just a small kind of local federation. They partner with the IPE, Professional Federation there. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that was the first one I did. Then I won that one, went on, did the IPE, their show that they still had around local Southern California. And then I started looking, trying to find what the biggest and baddest natural bodybuilding competition out there was. And I found the PNBA Natural Olympia. So I said, all right, well, let's shoot for that. So then the following year I got ready and I competed in two of the NBA shows. First one was given my pro card there. That was the, our Iron Gladiator.
Yeah.
Then I competed in which one was the Caicos Battle Against Cancer show, mm-hmm. and then the Natural Olympia in November.
Okay. So, and that, what year was that?
This is last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've only been doing bodybuilding for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
And yeah.
So are you still planning on competing some more?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I right now, I mean, obviously things could change, but I have the mindset that I want to keep competing just for as long as I can.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, I mean, I did it. I didn't, to be honest with you, when I started, I was doing it naturally, but then as time went on, I went to the other side, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's hard on your body. The way that we did it was real difficult and tears you up pretty good. I think the IMBA is a really great thing to be a part of, you know, because it really is healthy. It's way healthier. Let's put it that way. You know, it makes more. And they also have the where they are like a family and they help each other out. I can see that would be a cool thing to do, you know. Anyway, as we're wrapping this show up, Brock, is there anything that I haven't covered that you'd like to talk about, or would you like to promote something on our show?
Oh, goodness. Man, you really put me on the spot with that one. Something I haven't covered. No,
I like seeing people squirm. So go ahead, go for it.
Oh man, something to promote. I don't know if I have really anything to promote. I mean, I did kind of go back to a little bit. I need to be pursuing it further. But I did kind of start looking to do kind of online training and building and things that way, writing up programs and everything that way for people. If they're interested in reaching out to me, they can either reach out to me on my personal Instagram, Brock Markham, or the professional Instagram I'm using is at Set the Pose. And that was just something because that my coach just told me once. I think it was like before my first show. He just kind of just yelled it at me, Set the Pose, you know. And so that's just kind of been my mantra thing. I use that hashtag a lot, hashtag Set the Pose. So if you want to use that as well, or at Set the Pose. And I use that just because, like, when people ask me, what does that mean? I said, well, in bodybuilding, you know, you have to start from the ground up. You set the pose. Right. You have to be serious, fully committed in there. Set it from the ground all the way up. And I'm like, well, do that in anything you're doing. Whatever you're pursuing, it doesn't have to be bodybuilding. Set the pose, meaning be full in, you know, start from that ground up and really just go for it. So
that makes good sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, listen, it was been nice getting to know you.
Thank you. As well.
I think you're a smart guy, and I think you got a really bright future ahead of you. You have a good presence about you, so I'm sure you're going to go a long ways. But,
thank you.
If there's anything that you want to at some point bring on, like if you actually are now a online, if you have your own online training or anything that you want to talk about down the road, don't hesitate to come back on. I'd like to have you on.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll look forward to it.
All right. All right, man. Well, I hope this shutdown gets over with sooner than later so we can all go back to work, right?
Yeah, no joke. I love that. Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Listen, you take care of yourself.
Thank you. You as well. Have a good
day. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.